answer one of the Wednesday Kumasi rings and said, somebody said that their daughter attends Mayanot and their Purusha Balter or the Mara teacher, I don't know how they identify her, made certain statements that you're not permitted to brush your teeth on Shabbos, or that you're not permitted to brush your hair on Shabbos, and they had known that I had spoken about this, you know, in a various context, and said that it was okay. So, I remember that I had once spoken about this issue, and I looked up my notes, and 15 years ago, I recall that this part I had spoken, they wrote and asked me to speak on this, a very similar topic, impetus at that time was a very similar situation, but not with Mayanot, because it didn't exist at that time, but their daughters went to brewery. Now, the brewery of 15 years ago was not the brewery of today, even though what I have in mind would apply to even brewery of today as well. And at that time, the teacher, they were learning about the Shabbos, and the person said, there is nobody on this planet who will allow you to make tea in a cliche. You take a cup of water from your urn, put it in a kettle, pour it into a cup, and dip a tea bag. There is nobody who would allow it. So my daughter, who was in that class, said, yeah, Abba, I know you make tea with a tea bag all the time. I said, yeah, I can tell you. I know for a fact that the rub did it as well, and said that it was perfectly okay. I didn't have any evidence to demonstrate that the Rav had done it, because the Rav never put any of his Piskei Halacha into writing. Everything is oral tradition. It's what students may have heard in, asked them, and I was in a position, due to the fact that I served in Tishamash for 2 years, so I had an opportunity to ask him lots of questions, taking the afternoon. So there was no record of it. However, when Rabbi Schechter decided to publish what he called Nefesh HaRav, anecdotal stories and interesting tidbits that he had heard from the Rav, he subsequently printed several volumes of it, he happened to have had an entry where he had a section on Hilchos Shabbos, and he mentioned that the Rav's grandfather, Rav Chaim Brisker, who is the forerunner of this analytical type of learning called the Brisker Derech, which you may have heard bandied about many yeshivot, made tea in this very fashion, and he has a little note, it's a whole three-line actually, I have it on this page, and he said that the Rav conducted himself that way as well. So now I had something in writing, and I mailed it to this wonderful Parashah Balpeh teacher, and I simply advised her that if you, and this is what I'm going to, pitch as well, I'll tell you what I advised her after I come to certain conclusions this evening as well, and it'll be even more critical to those of you who might be on the boards of Mayanot, because locally that's the only yeshiva high school for girls, at least, where you have this situation, and it would apply for a local yeshiva high school for boys as well, at least in the situation of PABC, we don't have that because the pool of faculty has one type of an orientation, a YU orientation, and they know very well that they have to research what the Rav had said on given halachic issues, whereas if you hire people from different backgrounds, a little more yeshivish background, not only don't they know, but they're not particularly interested in even inquiring because he didn't rate in their school as somebody who you might have to consult. So if Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about something black on white, that's where it ended, and that's why they come to the position that they did. So I'd like to address this from two different perspectives. The focus tonight is not on the halachic issues per se. That's a halacha shiur. Tonight is how to deal with the conflicts that arise when you have a son or daughter coming home. My rebbe, my teacher said, you're not allowed to do this. Okay? Now you, so number one is how do you relate to the child, knowing that you have done something and in all probability will continue to do something because whoever it is, your local rabbi said it was okay. How do you handle that interaction? And how do you respectfully indicate to your son or daughter that they have to maintain respect for their teacher at all times, and yet be able to communicate freely that there might be alternate opinions on this matter, and that it behooves you as a teacher to become somewhat familiar with those alternate positions. So I'd like to start with some broad remarks which the Rambam makes concerning our obligation to respect our teachers. And the Rambam is very interesting and very powerful, so let's start with that. I cited a Rambam in Hilchos Kabbalat Torah and a Rambam in Hilchos Zeilah. The Rambam writes in Perek Hamishin source out, Kishen she'adam mitzuvah b'chvod aviv v'yirato. Just as an individual, every individual, is obligated to observe the mitzvah of kibud and the mitzvah of yirah for their father and mother, kachu chayav b'chvod rabo v'yirato yeter mi'aviv. So too, one is obligated to demonstrate that type of respect and awe, yirato, I'm not translating as fear, as awe for your Rebbe, for his Rebbe and your Rebbe, even more so than your parents. Now the Rambam here is assuming that you know what the definitions of kibud and yira are. They are not loose catch buzzwords that have no halakhic context. It's something, and I've given this lecture as well, parents love to think that it's an all-encompassing catchphrase. There's a mitzvah kibud aveh, you have to listen to me whenever I say. That's not true. And many times parents have to be educated as to what issues they have a right to expect their child to comply with, and what issues they have no right to demand that a child act one way or another, because all you're doing is setting up a situation where the child has all of the halakhic rights in the world to disagree with you, and you are the one creating that source of friction and hostility. So I'm not going to, there are many such issues as to who they're going to marry, as to what direction of education they're going to, I'm not talking about little fishes, but somebody who's going to, you know, a decision, what college I'm going to, what yeshiva in Israel, what the profession I want to enter, where are you going to live? Parents have no say in the matter. And kibud av v'aim doesn't play a role just because you think your kid should go to law school or medical school. That doesn't mean that a child has to listen to you because of kibud av v'aim. So there are many parameters, and it applies the same thing with the Rebbe. So when the Rambam says, Kvod Aviv v'yirato, now applies to a Rebbe, he assumes that you'll remember what he wrote in Hilchot Mamrim, where the Rambam decided to code the laws of Kibud Av V'Aim, very interesting, that he decided to code it in the book of Hilchot Mamrim, the laws that discuss the rebellious elders, because the Rambam has a rule that unless he has sufficient material to write three chapters, he incorporates it somewhere else. It's interesting to see where he decided to incorporate it and everything, but this is where the Rambam writes. So the Rambam has a definition. What constitutes kavod? Basically, kavod means to provide services. Basically, it means ma'achilo, mashkehu, if they need some assistance to drink, it'll happen very frequently with elder parents, where you actually have to feed them. You actually have to give them something to drink. In fact, somebody commented to me that he knows this Gemara for many years, but he never fulfilled this respect of kibud av v'aim in the examples that the Gemara, I'm sure he took out the garbage when he was 15 years old, but he was never ma'achil his mother and father. Now that they're elderly and finding it difficult, he actually is feeding them and really fulfilling that act of kibud. Or you help them in and out of a car, mochi, oh, machni, so. You help them simply means to provide services. Yirah is defined as that you're not permitted to sit at your parents' seat. Not permitted. At the dining room table. Not permitted to occupy their seat. And you're not permitted to chime in when your father is having a dialogue with somebody. Hey, Pop, you're 100% right. And he doesn't need your approval. He doesn't need your approbation that his analysis of the stock market is correct. Even though he was just a businessman who made it on his own, and you went to the Harvard Business School, and your understanding is probably far more sophisticated, he doesn't need your approbation. Nor are you permitted to contradict him to his face. So, well, he's totally wrong. In his face, you never engage in the debate. What you do privately, again, if it's an area that he has no right to dictate policy for you, but somebody said, I don't want to go into this, I want to be friends with that person. It's not your parents' right to determine who your friends are. So respectfully, you don't argue with them. So then you go ahead and go out to the movies with that particular person. You'll violate nothing. But under those circumstances, so that's the framework of what a Rebbe is expected to as well. You're obligated to be the major Rebbe, to provide services to your teacher. And you're never permitted, the student is never permitted to sit in their teacher's chair. They like to think it's funny, right? You're sitting at the teacher's desk. You're not allowed to, because it's a violation of Yirah. And to some extent, you can't disagree with them. Of course, in Halacha, in Gemara, you can argue with them. You're encouraged to argue with them, respectfully, and, you know, demonstrate your opinion. But halachically, you cannot challenge their halachic conclusion. You cannot challenge their halachic conclusion. Because the Gemara looks at a student as being far inferior to his Rebbe, his or her Rebbe. Rebbe is placed on a pedestal, and that's what the Rambam will have in mind, that an individual is obligated to provide kibbutz and yirah even a greater degree than to one's parents. And the Rambam tells us why. She'aviv v'ni'ol l'chayei ha'olam hazeh. Father raises you and enables you to counter the issues that you will encounter in olam hazeh. V'rabo shelimdo chachma. And the teacher who taught you chachma, the Rambam didn't say necessarily Torah. Chachma, even broad wisdom, science, and math, will ultimately enable you to what? To reach the world to come. And therefore the Rambam tells us, I will demonstrate in concrete halakhic terms where I will show you Rebbe takes priority over a parent. You find two lost articles in the street, and you can only retrieve one. You can only retrieve one. Can't do both. Rachel Rabo Kodem Michelle Aviv. Your parents, which is your teacher's lost article, takes priority over your own parents. You have to bring the lost article to the Rebbe, and your parents' lost article will remain lost for your loved one, even if it means you're never going to recover it. Tough thought. Aviv v'rabo nosim b'masar. If you find father and your Rebbe are struggling over a load, they're both coming home from Shaprayim at the exact same time. And you can help one of them. Meniach et shel rabo. First you help your Rebbe take the packages out. Ve'achakach shel avi. Then you help your parents. And if you can't do both, do your Rebbe's first. Aviv v'rabo shvuyim v'shivya. Father and your Rebbe have been taken captive. So it is a mitzvah pinyon shvuyim. Cost $1 million ransom. But you don't have $2 million to redeem your father and your Rebbe. Todeh et rabo. First you redeem your teacher. Ve'achakach todeh et avi. Then you go ahead and redeem your parents. I know that some parents have responded know what he's talking about. They're ignorant. They don't know what he's talking about. They don't know what he's talking about. He doesn't know what he's talking about. She doesn't know what she's talking about. That type of lingo has to be avoided at all costs. And it's a typical reaction. Particularly if the parent, him or herself, is knowledgeable. Kid comes home from school and says, you saw what's the reaction? That guy's not Murray. So we're way into it. You can't say that to a kid. Your Rebbe's not Murray. Because all it does is foster a sense that, you know, why should I ever listen to him at all? My father and mother think that the Rebbe doesn't know anything, is an ignoramus. It underlines the entire ability of the child to be able to relate to his Rebbe in a fashion which he should.
You're holding the Rebbe aside, can you say? I take issue with that S. I think that S may be incorrect without insulting the Rebbe.
100%. You're allowed to disagree with the Rebbe in the course of Talmudic discourse. They did that, and that's what the Talmud is all about. That's what it's all about. You have a machlokes, right? A Rebbe and a Talmud. Rav Yochanan and Rav Shlokish. The Rebbe and the Talmud and Rebbe. And Rav Shlokish argues with Rav Yochanan all the time. Obviously, respectfully. So, but you're allowed to take issue with him, eh? And it's not just, I disagree with you. Why do you disagree with him? What source can you show me to demonstrate that what my analysis is the Rebbe was not as compelling or as powerful as you think? What was it? So under those circumstances, you have a right to do so, and that's what we encourage Talmidim to do. That's precisely what we encourage Talmidim to do, to argue. That's what a Rebbe should be doing. That's a training. That's a good thing. Rebbe's not supposed to deliver a share. He's not supposed to rattle it off. He's supposed to engage the student, to enable the student to be critical and to challenge. That's what the job of a Rebbe is. Issue tonight is that you have a teacher, a Rebbe, who makes a statement about some of the things that we take for granted in our community, and the person says, well, that's 100% awesome. That's all it is. End of discussion. So I brought you an example of something along these lines. An example or two. Okay? I will discuss the issue itself. Take a look at source given. Example, because this was the question that was raised right here on Palisade Air. So Rabbi Shapter writes in Nefesh Alav, Rabbeinu Hayas the source gimel, Rabbeinu Hayas Sabur, Shemutar Lishtamesh the Mishkat Shinayim B'Shabbat. Did you allow to use toothpaste on Shabbos? Now, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein in his monumental work, Igros Moshe, has a very small little tshuva, maybe 8 lines, and he writes, it's asur midoraita to use toothpaste on Shabbos. So this is not a debate about an isa d'rabbana, right? It's asa d'rabbana. This is min hakatzen el hakatzen. It's asur midoraita to, it's muslim hakatzen to do it. Okay? The advantage that Ramosha had is that in the book, it's in this book. Anybody can open it up, and you go to Arachayim and look at Shabbos. There's an index, there's a whole very good index called Yad Moshe, which tells you where every tshuva of Moshe, there's an 8 or 9 volumes, it's hard to look it up, it tells you exactly which volume, what page it's on, and you look it up, it's right there. It's right there. And the Ram was made aware of this particular tshuva, and he disagreed, and one of the arguments which could be used in terms of against using toothpaste is that it violates the Isur of Nemachet. Nemachet. What is Nemachet? Nemachet is where you go ahead and smooth something down. It was done in the activity of the Mikdash of making it illustrates the 39 melachot, is it takes certain activities and goes from the beginning of the activity to the end of the activity. So the first 11 of the 39 melachot are called sidur in the pot, baking bread. How many activities along the way of baking bread constitute melachot? Well, there are 11. You have to plow, you have to plant, you have to harvest, right, in order to get the grain. You got to grind, you have to thresh and grind, and so on and so forth. Then you knead the dough, then you bake it. So each step along the way illustrates one of the 39 levels. Then there is another activity, and that's called making the leather. So they went through the activity. First you have to what? Slaughter the animal. Then you have to skin it. Right? And then you remove the hairs. And then you smooth it. Smooth it down. Very nice. That's what malachim is. So now somebody will tell you that you're not permitted to use toothpaste on Shabbos because of malachim. What would be the issue that they are concerned? What are they concerned? Tell me what the issue is. Smoothing down your teeth.
Okay, you take something and smooth it in.
אמר שלא שייך לאסור מכאן ומראה, אלא במקום שהוסיף שפח חלק חדש על דמי משהו. Mimareach is only when you take another foreign substance, and what do? You put it on top of something. You smooth something onto something else. A cream or something like that? Exactly, a cream.
Is that what you're doing with this?
Okay. But it's, what do you do with it after 5 seconds? You rinse it up and then it's gone.
Exactly right.
It's not done with any degree of permanence. And therefore, the world argues that, of course, using toothpaste on Shabbos is 100% okay. In fact, when I asked him this, a couple of other foods were there as well, he said something that I never heard him say in any other time. The world had enormous respect for a Moshe Feinstein. Enormous. First of all, he was a cousin. And secondly, he had enormous respect for a Moshe. Enormous respect. Whenever they appeared together at a wedding, even if it was the Rav Talmud, the Rav told them, you, Rav Moshe, are going to be the Masada Kedusha. So Rav Moshe said, and it's your Talmud, you're supposed to be. He says, yeah, I'm being Masada Amor. What does Masada mean? I'm making the arrangements. I'm in charge here. And I'm telling you to recite the Berachas Erusin. You're going to be the one to recite. See, I had enormous respect. Call them every year before Rosh Hashanah, from Tashah, all the time. And he disagreed with Rav Moshe countless times in Tiskei Allah, which was his right. And he's always respected. In this particular area, I couldn't believe what he said. He said, and I'll push it, Nish Tashtan and the Malach. He says, Rav Moshe didn't understand what Mareach was all about. I couldn't believe it, but that's what he said. I heard it in my own ears. So he was convinced that there was nothing wrong with using toothpaste. Now, until Rabbi Shechter Sefer came out X number of years ago, this entry didn't appear any place in public. No place in public. So, could I expect somebody whose educational background was in Beis Yaakov or some seminary that they would necessarily be exposed to Michlala? Highly unlikely. But my point is that in a yeshiva high school which caters to our community, it behooves the Torah Shema Al-Peh teacher to become familiar with Pesukei Halacha of the Rebbe. It's absolutely compelling. Then the teacher only has to do to be fair. They don't have to say you're allowed to. They don't have to say you're not allowed to. They have to present a balanced picture. And not to say it is impossible that anybody would say that what? That you're not allowed to brush your teeth on Shabbos with toothpaste. Because that creates the tension, the conflict between a student and a parent. My Rebbe, who I love, who I look up to, said that we're doing something that is usher mid'oraisa on Shabbos. That at times, the Rebbe will come home and say something, and the student will come home and make it 100% right. And there is no defense for one's practice whatsoever. Sometimes, in our own educational background, we weren't as sophisticated, and we've been doing things which maybe are wrong. And if you can't defend it, if you don't have somebody who you respect, you know, your local rabbi, whoever it is, who will tell you that this practice is defensible, then it behooves you to say thank you to your son and daughter and make the change. And make the change. You can't be an option and say, you know what? We've been doing this for 50 years. Grandma did it this way. More often than not, when grandma did it, there is some justification for it. And hopefully a halachic decisor and somebody will be able to document and explain it to them. But sometimes it's just out of the clear blue sky. Simply they were ignorant to some extent. That doesn't make it right. And just because one has been doing something for so many years doesn't mean that you have this obligation to necessarily continue. Make the change. Your son or daughter will now become incredibly impressed that they are the conduit of halachic information to you, and it is effecting change for the better in your household. Effecting change. So here, I believe it is the sacred responsibility of yeshiva high school administrators to make sure, and I can tell you it happens much more frequently with girls than in boys' places. Much more frequently. Because the pool of teachers for boys in high schools in our orbit and modern orthodoxy, there is enough of a YU pool to fill all of those positions. The pool for Judaic studies teachers, for women, for young women, the pool is not as rich as yet. It will be in a couple of years, but it's not as yet fully developed. And as a result, if they find that in order to fill some of these positions, they have to draw from schools whose educational philosophy is not necessarily out. So this would be an example of a conflict that comes up in a halachic setting. Sometimes it's exaggerated. I mean exaggerated. I know somebody who studied with a very fine Talmud Chacham whose yeshiva is in Far Rockaway. This person had a very fine student, and this particular student was a main player right here in one of our yeshiva high schools for many, many years. But this particular Rebbe had positions never or not incorporated by mainstream Jews. And he would come home and tell his kids, unless you do things in such a fashion, this is in a mainstream yeshiva high school, right here in our own community. But his background was such that he learned with this particular Rebbe. And the friction that created was unbelievable. He would say, if we don't have two matzahs at the Seder instead of three, pop, you're an ignoramus. The halacha is you have to have only two matzahs. This is the Rambam and Tosfos. And world jury does not follow the Rambam. World jury decides we have three matzahs, not two. I know what the machlokes is all about. I know the Vilna Gaon only had two matzahs, and the Rav only had two matzahs. But the Rav fits the chizuk. The Rav doesn't do that. So a Rebbe has to be understand that as well, that you can't make a statement to a student saying, what you're doing is 100% wrong, when your shakalaka doesn't represent the mainstream. It's just as wrong. I'll give you the example with the tea. Okay? Most yeshivot would educate their children that you do not put hot water into a cup and dip the tea in. Either you need a cliche slishy, right? You have to put the cup in, or you use scents. You don't dip the tea in. So, okay. So, I told you that's what happened at Bruria. Take a look at the last source. The Mishnah Bruria, Simon Shimon Yitzchaz, Sivkot Lamites, Kevi Da'at Kama Min Ha'achronim L'Hachmir Shelo La'asotei Afilu B'Klishen. It's based on the following. Under normal circumstances, we believe that a klisheni is not the basha. Klisheni cannot cook. In order for the halachic process of cooking to take place, it has to be in a kli rishon, which means the pot that is put on the fire. Ladies, that's nothing to do with temperature. Because initially, the change in temperature, from the minute you pour it from the kettle into the cup, for the first second, you can't. you'll burn your fingers. It's got nothing to do with temperature. It's a halacha. Cliche is not the rational. Except, says the Gemara, for Kali Habisha like spices.
Are allowed to, but
no, I don't think that's
right either.
Make them a parent. What does it do to them?
the Rebbe and the parents, a Rebbe has a right to say, that's a machlokes. I think the halacha is lakuna. Parent has a right.
Unless I take a bath. I don't feel like a human being. And
He believes that the Issur Rechitza for an Avel doesn't apply to somebody who feels I'm not a human being unless I take a shower. So the Rav said, Rabbi Shechter echoes it as well. In North America, this man out there, everybody's an Ischemus. Who doesn't take a shower every single day? And we don't feel like a human being if we don't take a shower. We don't feel like a human being when we don't take a shower. Going through Tisha B'Av is more so than Yom Kippur. It's hard when it's 98 degrees out. It's very hard. Not just if you're dying of thirst, but if you feel uncomfortable. So I tell people this, and they're looking really crazy. It says in this book, my rabbi, I heard this from my rabbi, my rabbi. I said, okay, I don't expect it. I've not written any claims. You know, Rabbi Shach eventually has it in one of his subsequent books. So it's okay. So it happens. But not to be aware of it in our community does a disservice to your constituents. There's a disservice. Does anybody have to take a shower? Obviously not. If the father will say, let's assume a son passed away, the father's sitting with his children, and the father doesn't want to take, and out of respect to him, okay, so what's the big deal? His niche. We just had such a case in the shul, where somebody was sitting shiva, father died, and the father said, you know, he had sex shiva, and he did not take a shower, he's aware of this, I don't want to pass him that way. So the son, in deference to the mother, didn't take a shower. Did not. It's a show. Not saying you have to incorporate every single kula. Your family's matna. Your child should respect that. And hopefully receive the encouragement of the Rebbe in both directions. To maintain your family practice, is that what you should be doing? You want to grow up when you grow up and you're independent. You want to be a machmir? Be my guest. Come with me. I'll rock like the Mishnah Berurah right 50 times. That's your prerogative. I have no problem with somebody being a machmir. Just don't impose it on someone else. Yeah. That's the way to say it. But I think I don't think your Rebbe presented the whole picture. That's not disrespectful. And then I would pick up the phone or send an email. Why didn't you at least present the other side to the teacher? 100%. You get no, and if you see it's a pattern, then you know we have a problem and the administration has to be made aware of it. Yeah. Nefesh HaRav is only written in Hebrew. Yeshiva, policy. That's the problem. That all of the English literature is based. I'm not saying. Okay, it will eventually. It'll come slowly. How many years did the Mishnah not have an article? It was a long time, right? It's going to be, it'll happen. Somebody will decide, I'm translating Nefesh HaRav to English. Perhaps do a better system, better job systematically presenting it halakhically, or extract from it a halakhic word, which people have been reluctant to do, even deliberately, because it's a particular issue. The Rav's family is dead set again. There are a lot of politics involved and everything. The Rush family particularly will not approve any project and will react negatively to anybody who didn't ask permission. Sometimes you don't ask permission to print anyhow. But the Halakha, Piskei Halakha, they have warned several people, you better not do this.
Why did the Rush?
Because the Rav was in the image of his parents. and grant them. They wrote virtually nothing. For two reasons. Number one, because they never believed that they had arrived at the absolute truth yet. That once they were put into writing, I can always think of a better svara to have come to this conclusion. So they were always amending and sort of. And secondly, I know from my little experience, in order to write, you have to have time. And the Rav preferred to teach until the last available minute of his life. And when you teach, you have to prepare, and as opposed to be secluded and sit and write, which requires quiet, no interruptions, and just the ability to sit and write. That didn't particularly move him to sit and learn on his own and to write. He wasn't interested in it. He wanted interaction with Talmidim. That's why the only thing that appeared early was philosophical works in the Rav. That he felt he could never spend time with after philosophy. I don't need a class in order to develop my philosophical Weltbach shower. But to develop a Rambam and a Shir and a Halacha, I need and I love that interaction. So until the day he was forced to retire due to illness, he never spent a whole summer. All he did was teach. Every single summer, he invited students to onset. He had a house in Amsterdam. He invited students to come and learn with him. He gave Shir all summer. Boston, he didn't take off. Saturday night, he did the same as Saturday night. Sunday morning, he had a Gemara Shir. So he didn't take off any time. But Moshe wasn't that way. But Moshe spent all his time writing, answering Tshuvot. Because Rav Moshe wasn't a very good Rosh Yeshiva, I should have said. He was not. He gave a Shir once a week, not six times a week. And Rav Moshe's strength was not a Maggid Shir. It's very difficult to understand. Very difficult. People who studied by Rav Aaron Kotler said that for the first 6 months they didn't know what the Sefer was giving Shir. That's how hard he was to understand. Extremely difficult. He spoke like he had marbles in his mouth, they said. That's what they said. So that wasn't their strength. It was a gadol. So Rav Moshe's contribution to this world was not as a Maggid Shir. He had some words on the Gemara Dibros Moshe, but nobody looks at that. It was Moshe. It's a philosopher. One of the greatest poskim in the last 500 years. Afraid to tackle no issue. Every issue. Willing to tackle. So that's so it's published. There's a record of it. It's a document. And there are, it's the same thing I mentioned on the title shift, hairbrushing. Right? There's a simple principle which is subject to debate. Why did this particular teacher say you're not allowed to brush your hair on Shabbos? Why did they say that? Because you're pulling out your hair. Okay? So just in 20 seconds, what happens when you... There is a principle called Dabar Sheino Miskaven. Where you do a permissible activity which perhaps leads to a malacha, perhaps does not lead to a malacha. That type of activity is permitted according to law. Where you engage in a permissible activity which might trigger a malacha. The case in the Gemara is illustrated as following. I have a backyard, and I'm serving lunch in my backyard, and somebody doesn't want to pick up the chair, he wants to pull it along the ground. And it might dig a hole. But that's Choresh. Dig a hole in the ground is Harisha. But it might not. So everybody says it's work. That's the way we find it. If it's guaranteed to happen, then it's awesome. It's awesome. If it's guaranteed to happen, unless you're not interested in the results. It's guaranteed, but it's detrimental. So let's assume for just a moment, somebody brushes their hair, would you say it happens every single time that when you brush your hair, it pulls out hair? Every stroke of the brush. Guaranteed to happen?
No, not every
time. Does it happen sometimes? Sometimes not? then it's a Dovah Shein Miskatan. I never intended to do so. Sometimes the hair gets pulled out, sometimes the hair doesn't get pulled out. Therefore, by definition, it's permissible. I'll get to that marv upstairs.
Yes.
Therefore, even if it would be guaranteed that every single time you pull out your hair, which is called a psik ratio, it's guaranteed to happen, but it's lo michale. You're not pleased with the results. Why are you not pleased with the results? Because if you'd be pleased with the results, you'll be a baldy very soon. Obviously, you're not pleased with the results. So some authorities believe, that if you have an activity which you don't intend to engage in the malacha, you engage in a permissible activity, brushing your hair is a permissible activity, it will trigger a what? A malacha with taking place. And I have no interest, or it's against my better interest. Some say that it's asur midrabbanan. That's what some say. It's not biblically prohibited, it's asur midrabbanan. Once again, the world is a maker. And he said, no, I think it's mutar l'chatzir, because his grandfather thought it was mutar l'chatzir. So with the hairbrush, you're telling me that it happens sometimes yes, sometimes no. That's exactly the type of case of pulling the chair. Sometimes it digs the furrow, digs the hole, sometimes it doesn't. That every place on the planet says it's mutar l'chatzir. Because we talk to like Rabbi Shimon, who says that it's mutar. If it's guaranteed to happen every single time, then some authorities say it's the mainstream of it. It's also midrabbanan. But in this community, you have to know that the world was made. Where did he get it from? A Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim the Rosh Rebbe, friend of the Sefer, Kedushin Reb Chaim Halev. I guarantee you most of these Gemara teachers, particularly those who are teaching in Yeshiva School for women, never saw the Reb Chaim in some charity. Never saw. So I don't expect them to know. But in this community, you got to be aware of it. Especially hashgacha-wise.